My guest, Dr. Frank Turek, says the only way that the atheists can make their arguments is by stealing from God.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am sitting here in my studio with Dr. Frank Turek, holding in my hands his brand new book with an amazing cover. Wow, feel that on the front. Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. I'm going to be talking extensively with Frank Turek about the contents of this book. It's going to be a lively, enjoyable show, and we're going to hit on big, key, difficult issues. I get to play the devil's advocate or the skeptic's advocate or the struggling believer's advocate today and put the pressure on Frank because I know he's got answers. The book, Stealing from God, Dr. Frank Turek, his website is crossexamined.org. You'll find a ton of useful information there. If you have a question that you'd like to ask Dr. Turek, if you're struggling, if you've got a family member who's struggling, or if you've always wrestled with something and not found a satisfactory answer, this is a great day to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Frank, welcome to The Line of Fire. Great to have you.
Mike, wonderful to be with you as always. And I love this studio, man. This is great here.
Yeah, we're first time in our new offices here. We'll take you on a tour of the building in a moment. But Frank, why is this whole issue of atheism, serious questions about the faith, why is this so personally important to you?
Well, it's personally important to me because these are the folks that I deal with when I go to college campuses quite a bit. And I have, for many years, have gone to college campuses and presented evidence for Christianity in a program based on our book called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And Mike, when you call something I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, you get everybody from atheist to Christian showing up. And I want to reach out to those people. I want to reach out to the atheists and the skeptics and the people who aren't quite sure maybe what they believe or what is true. I want to provide them evidence that Christianity is indeed true.
All right. Do you feel, honestly, as someone who loves the Lord, that you ever have to kind of shut off your mind in order to just love God because there are too many objections? Or do you find that you can love God with heart and mind together?
I think the only way you really can love the true God is to know about him and to know that he exists. In order to really move from belief that, which is just intellectual, to belief in, which is more volitional and of the heart, I think you have to have a foundation that belief that is true. Because if you don't know who God is, it's really hard to worship him.
All right. When you're at college campuses, do you find that you're presenting things that these kids haven't really heard or thought about before?
Yes. Yes, unfortunately. And I talk about in the book, I think the number one question every human being needs to answer, Mike, is does God exist? Because everything hinges on that question. If God doesn't exist, then there is no real meaning to life. Live however you want. It doesn't really ultimately matter. If God does exist, everything changes. And I find that very infrequently do young people even have any idea of the arguments for or against God.
Right. So when they hear things, it's not about it. They've thought it through and they differ. They just, they haven't heard them.
They haven't heard them.
And even at college, a lot of times they haven't thought.
And even in most, not all, but most kids who come from Christian homes haven't heard the arguments for God either.
Exactly.
In fact, the problem isn't that we lose Christian minds at college. The problem is so few Christian minds get to college.
Exactly. And that's because there are sometimes not enough Christian minds in the pulpit or
in
the home.
Yeah.
All right. The book, Stealing from God, we've put together a special package just today where you can get the book and the CD of my two-hour interview with Dr. Frank Turek. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Also, right around Christmas time, Newsweek published a cover story, which many took as a hit piece against the Bible. I took exception with it as well. Well, Newsweek has allowed me to write an extensive rebuttal, even longer than the initial piece. It's now up on Newsweek. They've told me it's getting a lot of traffic already. To read the article, go to AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, click latest article. And the author of the Newsweek article, Kurt Eichenwald, is going to be joining me for 2 hours next Wednesday on The Line of Fire, eager to talk the issues through. We'll be right back with Dr. Frank Turek, the new book, Stealing from God.
want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. My guest, Dr. Frank Turek, his new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. If you have a question for Frank, if you have a question about belief, if you have a question about existence of God, if you have a question about science and the Bible, Frank's probably heard it all, spoken on college campuses way, way, way more than I have. He's got a wonderful open door there, and will do his teaching on I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and gets all kinds of responses, and some of them are classic on YouTube to watch as he responds in a thoughtful way to these aggressive kids that maybe haven't thought issues through. Frank, what do you mean why atheists need God to make their case?
Well, it's probably best explained by example. What I'm saying is that atheists try and use elements of reality to say that God doesn't exist when those elements of reality wouldn't exist unless God existed. So let me give an example. One of the things atheists say that shows that God doesn't exist is there's too much evil in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But evil doesn't disprove God. Evil may prove there's a devil out there, but it doesn't disprove God, because there'd be no such thing as evil unless there was good, and there'd be no such thing as good, at least in an objective sense, unless God existed. Because if there is no God, everything's a matter of opinion. There is no real good or evil. It's just all a matter of opinion. So in order for evil to exist, good must exist, but in order for good to exist, God must exist. You could put it this way. C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said, the shadows prove the sunshine. In order to have shadows, you have to have sunshine. In other words, in order to have evil, you have to have good. Oh, you can have sunshine without shadows. You can have good without evil, but you can't have evil without good. So evil does not disprove God, yet atheists try and say it does. In effect, what they're doing is they're stealing from God in order to argue against him.
All right, so when I debated Professor Bart Ehrman mm-hmm. on the problem of evil, does the Bible provide an adequate answer to the problem of suffering?
Right.
I said, if there is no God, there's no problem of evil.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
There's a lot of suffering, but if there's no God, then all the evil that people experience is no different than a spider eating a fly,
right,
or a lion eating a zebra.
That's just
nature.
Uh-huh.
So give me another example.
Oh, well, another example is atheists always try and use reason to say that they're real reasonable, and they're the beacons of reason. In fact, Daniel Dennett, one of the new atheists, said, we ought to start calling ourselves brights because we're the bright ones.
Right, right.
Well, here's the problem. If atheistic materialism is true, and most of the new atheists are materialists, they think nothing exists but materials, we're just molecules in motion, there's no such thing as reason. Because every thought Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens ever had were the result of a previous natural cause over which they had no control, because they're just molecules in motion. So there are no laws of logic that are immaterial. There is no real reasoning going on. There's only reacting. In fact, Doug Wilson had a debate with Christopher Hitchens, and I debated Hitchens a couple times too. And during one of his debates with Hitchens, he said, look, Christopher, you're no different than a Coke can fizzing if materialism's true. So reason itself, ironically, doesn't exist if God doesn't exist. But atheists try and say they're the reasonable ones, so they're stealing reason from God in order to argue against it.
All right, what if they said, no, we just evolved in such a way that we are now reasoning, thinking creatures? What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, the very thought that they evolved is the result of a previous natural cause over which they have no control. So even if they have the thought that evolution provided us our reasoning capacities, then why should they believe they're true? Secondly, Darwin even pointed this out. He said, if my mind is just the product of a monkey mind, why should I even believe what I believe, even if it's about evolution?
Right.
Thirdly, the laws of logic can't be explained by what we think about them. Either they exist or they don't. In fact, we're using them right now to point out whether they exist or they don't.
Right.
I mean, the law of non-contradiction is not made of molecules, and you're not going to find it in your woodshop somewhere. It's an immaterial reality that's grounded in an immaterial mind known as God.
Right. So if it's just neurons firing, mm-hmm. then it would be the equivalent, say in my office here, if we got one of those really bouncy balls, mm-hmm. you could throw it a certain angle and it just hit a certain way that it just kept bouncing all mm-hmm. over, and each mm-hmm. thing would be a different random bounce. It's basically the same kind of thing.
That's right.
Neurons firing.
That's right.
Totally material.
Yeah. Yet reason requires immaterial realities, and it requires us to have not just a brain, but a mind. If our brain and mind are the same, then that we have no warrant to believe anything we think, even if we think evolution and atheism are true. We have no warrant to believe it.
Got it. All right. What I found fascinating when I got this book, I was glad to give an endorsement for your book.
Yes, thank you for doing that.
But you already had such outstanding endorsements that I didn't even make it on the back cover. You've got Eric Metaxas, the bestselling author of Bonhoeffer Miracles. You've got David Limbaugh, New York Times bestselling author of Jesus on Trial, and of course, Rush's brother. Dr. John Lennox, professor of mathematics at Oxford University. Brilliant man. Had him on my show. Mm. Dr. Mike Adams, professor of criminology at UNCW, author of Letters to a Young Progressive. Dr. Stephen C. Meyer, author of Darwin's Doubt and Signature in the Cell. He calls your book lively and persuasive book. And then cold case detective, great apologist J. Warner Wallace. He says Frank Turek is smart, passionate, and unafraid to speak the truth. Stealing from God will change the way you think about the world and equip you to defend what you believe. One of my favorite things, Frank, was the book is so accessible. It's enjoyable to read. And you set up the arguments that someone's going to raise. You say this, but you know what I'm thinking in terms of, okay, I've got to come back to that. Well, you've got to come back to the comeback. Who did you write the book for?
I really wrote the book for anybody that either goes to college or has friends going to college or people who are just interested in these kinds of questions, because most of what is covered in the book here, Mike, are arguments that atheists give on a college campus, whether they're college professors or parts of the Free Thinkers Club, whatever they want to call themselves. It's ironic they call themselves free thinkers, Mike, because there's no free and there's no thinking going on if we're just molecules in motion. But I'll leave that aside. Now, this book is really written. It's for anybody can read it, quite obviously, but it really deals with the arguments that are being brought up on college campuses and in the culture to say that God doesn't exist.
And I heard Josh McDowell speak a few months back. It was at a graduation, an installment service for a new seminary president. And Josh McDowell spoke, and he said, with the vast experience, I don't know how many millions of young people he's spoken to, that the arguments that they were tackling, say that 18 and 20-year-olds were raising, now it's 13 and 14-year-olds, and it's primarily because of social media.
Yes.
That they're just getting exposed to things. So if someone's listening saying, well, this book may not be for me because my kid's only 12 or because I'm not in college, no, it's probably coming up. It's just out there, the objections, the questions. The new atheists, as much as we see the lack in their arguments and the lack of clarity in their arguments, many others are being persuaded. Tell me a story about a Christian kid that's been influenced by campus secular thinking, atheistic thinking. You have tons.
One of them stands out. I got an email not long ago from United States Marine, so I knew he was no sissy. But he wasn't writing me as a tough guy, Mike. He was writing me as a distraught father. He said, my daughter was the top Christian student in her high school class. And she won several scholarships from Christian organizations to take to college. She could take them to any college she wanted to. She wanted to go to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, about 3 hours from where you and I sit right now. And he said, so we sent her off there. About 4 weeks into the semester, I got a phone call from her. He said, her words devastated me. She said, Dad, I don't believe in God anymore.
4 weeks?
Yeah, 4 weeks. Don't believe in God anymore. He said, what? He said he drove 4 hours to the campus to sit down with her, and he said, I got nowhere with her. He said, what happened? And she said, well, you know, I got this atheist who teaches New Testament. It wasn't Bart Ehrman. It was somebody else out at UNC Chapel Hill. And he said, we don't even know who wrote the Gospels, and the Bible has errors in it, so, Dad, I'm an atheist now.
Mm.
And I said, she was not equipped to go off to college. You know, the easiest way to get picked off in a war, Mike, is to not know you're in one.
Yes.
And when you go to a college campus, or just when you go out in the culture now, you're in a war for the minds and souls of young people. And if we don't provide them with good evidence as to why Christianity is true, they're completely unarmed. Now, all the arguments that are given on a college campus, the ones I've heard anyway, don't carry any weight. And most of them steal from God in order to say God doesn't exist. That's the subject of the book. But most kids don't know how to deal with them, and that's what we try and show them in the book, that it's easy to deal with these arguments.
All right, friends, I want to encourage you to get a copy of Stealing from God, the author Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K. If you order it today, we've just got a special offer today and tomorrow. What we'll do is we'll package together with the book the CDs of our two-hour interviews. We're going to cover a ton of great material. You'll hear Frank's wisdom on these issues. It's going to be invaluable. $25 postage paid for the full two-hour interview, plus the book, Stealing from God. Give us a call at 1-800-278-2 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. This is not available online, only by phone. 1-800-278-9978. Frank, 30 seconds. You've broken the book down into a really helpful acronym, CRIMES. What does it stand for?
CRIMES. These are the things that atheists say support atheism, but in fact, none of them would exist without God. The C stands for causality. The R stands for reason. The I stands for information and intentionality. The M stands for morality. The E, evil. And the S, science. These are all things that atheists say support their worldview when none of them would exist unless God existed. And each one of those covers a chapter in the book.
All right. So, friends, usable, clear, and the type of thing that is digestible as well. So get a copy of the book, Stealing from God, Frank Turek. His website, cross-examined, that's with a D at the end, cross-examined.org. We're just getting started. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, with a shout out to all of our torchbearers. You, our monthly supporters, are the backbone of this ministry, and you keep the line of fire burning bright. To find out, friends, how you can become a torchbearer, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on donate.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
To say that science can disprove the existence of God is like saying that a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford. So says my guest, Dr. Frank Turek. His book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. If you have a question for Dr. Turek, if you differ with something he said and want to prove him wrong, by all means, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, back up your statement. To say that science can disprove the existence of God is like saying that a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford.
Well, I'm borrowing an illustration from the great John Lennox, who would give his students this, this kind of a question. He'd say, you've got a Model T in front of you. What accounts for the Model T? I'll give you two choices, Henry Ford or the laws of internal combustion. And the students immediately go, well, actually, you need both. Yeah, that's the point. You can learn everything you want to learn about how a Model T works. You can fix it. You can modify it. You can know everything about the laws of internal combustion. But that won't tell you, or prove that there's no Henry Ford. You still need a Henry Ford to create the thing.
Exactly.
Even though you might know everything about how it works. Now, when it comes to reality, I argue that not only do you need a creator of the universe, i.e. God, you need a sustainer of the universe. I mean, why do natural laws work so consistently and repeatedly? Because there's a mind behind them. That's why. Mm. There's precision behind the natural world. So even if you could prove that natural forces were responsible for just about everything that goes on here on Earth, that wouldn't disprove the need for a creator and sustainer of the universe.
Well, when Einstein said, to paraphrase, that the universe is comprehensible, and that's one of the most outstanding things. Mm-hmm. What did he mean by that?
Well, he and another mathematician back in the 1960s, well, Einstein died in 55, as you know, but there was another mathematician in the early 60s put out an article, The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Mathematics. Mm. And the question is, why does mathematics so accurately describe reality? And he, of course, gave no answer. And Einstein said, as you pointed out, the most incomprehensible thing about the reality is that it's comprehensible. Why can't our minds learn truth about the real world and describe it mathematically? Well, I think the answer is because this world is orderly, because there's a ground for mathematics and a ground for reason. And that's what we know to be God's nature.
So when you see that there that what you speak of and others, that the fine tuning of the universe, We recognize that there's fallen human nature. We understand there are flaws in the earth and things, but things could not operate unless everything was so clearly fine-tuned, which I've had you lay out to my students
sure.
in mind-boggling detail. So that's not the kind of thing that just happens. Mm-hmm. If a building is built and it has to be built in exact way to sustain certain number of floors and winds, and you've got architects and everyone coming in figuring it out, balancing it out, it doesn't just happen. That's different than just mud lying on the ground. But that's throughout the entire universe.
Sure. And Stephen Hawking points out that if you were to change the expansion rate of the universe by one part in a thousand million a second after the Big Bang, we wouldn't be here. Now, he's pointing out that that's from the initial condition of the universe, or the initial conditions of the universe. That's one of the initial conditions. That's the way the universe came into existence. So you can't make some sort of cosmic evolutionary argument to say, well, we evolved into that expansion rate. No, that was the expansion rate put in at the very beginning. Just if it were any different, we wouldn't be here.
Got it. And you have no problem with a Big Bang as long as...
Well, somebody banged it, right?
I mean, there's got to be the Big Banger.
Yeah, there has to be one out there. I mean, if space, matter, and time had a beginning, the cause can't be made of space, matter, and time. In other words, the cause must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, and also powerful to create the universe out of nothing. All men know this to be God.
And Stephen Hawking is as brilliant as he is, and his scientific acumen, in 10 seconds, he forgets more than I've learned about science in my life, probably. But he has some of those preposterous ideas that kind of the law of gravity created the universe. So it created itself out of nothing. Well, if it wasn't, then how could it do anything?
Where did the law of gravity come from? In fact, Paul Davies, who's an agnostic astronomer, wrote an article in the New York Times in 2006, Mike, where he posed the question, where did the laws of physics come from? And you'd have thought that he had committed atheistic blasphemy because the atheist came after him for even asking the question.
Wow.
And we cover that in chapter one of the book because he points out, look, you're taking the laws of nature on faith.
Right.
If you're an atheist, where do these laws of nature come from? And it seems to me they come from a mind. They're orderly. They're precise. They do the same thing over and over again because there's a mind behind them.
And the more we study and learn, the more we learn about DNA and these different things, the more we realize there has to be a mind behind them.
Because there's a message in DNA, and messages always come from minds. If we're walking along the beach and we see in the sand, John loves Mary, we don't think crabs or the waves did that. We go, there had to be an intelligent mind out there. Well, Mike, inside of you and inside of me and every listener right now, in every one of our 40 trillion cells, there is a message 3.5 billion letters long spelled out in DNA.
How does that compare, say, with computer software?
Well, it's the same thing, actually. And that's why Bill Gates said DNA is like a computer program, except it's far, far more advanced than anything we've ever created at Microsoft.
And it just happened.
Yeah, it just happened. Look, if there's a code, there must be a coder.
Exactly. Yeah. 866-34-TRUTH, the book Stealing from God by Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Let me try to grab one quick call. Jennifer in Palisades Park, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you? God bless you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I purchased several copies of Frank Turek's I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. After reading the book, I purchased 5 more copies for my family and friends, and I'm just calling to tell Dr. Turek that it is the single greatest book that I have ever read. It is outstanding. And well, if I want to describe it in one word, it's outstanding.
Well, thanks, Mom. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate that, Jennifer.
And thanks
for feeding my hungry kids by buying the book.
Awesome. Jennifer, that is high, high praise. And let me say this on the air. We have had callers call in who are atheists, who I've engaged in conversation, and I've said, listen, if I send you a book, will you read it? And I do that with my own books because we have them in stock. I have gone out and bought your book, Frank, that you co-authored with Norman Geisler, to send to listeners as a gift. But now we've got Stealing from God. 30 seconds. How is this different from I Don't Have Enough Faith?
This one deals more directly with atheistic claims than the other one does. And in this one, we have a chapter 7, which summarizes the arguments made in I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. So if people don't want to read as much as we go through in I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, they can get Stealing from God, chapter 7.
Yeah, you'll find it super engaging. Jennifer, very kind of you to call.
Yes,
thanks.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, listen, eat your heart out if you are going to be leaving me now, because I've got an hour and a half more to talk with Dr. Frank Turek. But fear not, we're putting everything on CDs. You can get the 2 CDs and his new book for just $25 postage paid. This is by phone only. It's not available like this online. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. The website, crossexamined, with a D.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Dr. Frank Turek, his new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. According to best-selling author Eric Metaxas, Stealing from God sends the new atheist to the canvas easily and with panache.
Panache, yeah.
And David Limbaugh, an unassailable case for the truth of Christianity. All right, Frank, there have been a lot of good responses to the new atheists over the years, and they've been engaged on different angles, of course. Richard Dawkins still won't debate William Lane Craig to his lasting discredit. Mm-hmm. But there have been many good responses, different books that have been put out. You've been carrying this message on campuses for years and years. What makes Stealing from God different? Why did you feel that there was another word you needed to get out?
Because I'm going underneath the arguments to the logic and philosophy behind them. I'm pointing out how self-defeating the arguments for atheism are. The main problem you see in atheistic arguments is that they create a theory and then they exempt themselves from it. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, they'll say everything's material, except, of course, their own minds, which they can't. You know, they can't think they're material, because if they are, then why should we believe anything they think? They say, well, consciousness is an illusion. Well, they don't think their consciousness is an illusion. Mm. They think their conscience, when they're writing books saying there is no consciousness or consciousness is an illusion, you know, they exempt themselves from their own theories. And that's part of the problem. And that's what I try and do throughout this book. Those who have read I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, you know, in the first chapter or two, we talk about a concept called the Roadrunner Tactic, where you're pointing out how something doesn't meet its own standard, how it's self-defeating. Like if I were to say to you, Mike, you know, there is no truth, you're going to say, well, is that true, right? So you're making a truth claim by saying there is no truth. Well, it turns out the atheists do the same thing time after time in virtually every argument they have. It's either self-defeating logically or they're exempting themselves from their own theories.
So in the same way that someone calls me a bigot and says, mm-hmm. don't judge. Jesus said, don't judge. You're a bigot. Then you say, well, you're judging me.
Yeah, why are you judging me for judging them?
Exactly. And, you know, what you say reminds me, in a literary context, you have these radical literary deconstructionists. Mm-hmm. You say there is no meaning in anything. So the classical literature, the Bible, it doesn't really mean what it says, except they expect you to follow what they mean.
Exactly. So when people say that, in fact, I've had this happen on a college campus where they say, you know, there is no meaning. The reader determines the meaning. I said, so you're saying there is meaning? And he goes, no, I'm saying there is no meaning. No, you're saying there is meaning. What do you mean I'm saying there is meaning? Well, I can take it any way I want, can't I? That's what you're saying, right? See, it's just,
exactly.
It's just nonsense. And by the way, people who say don't judge, like if I were to say to you, Mike, you're a wonderful radio host, you wouldn't say, who do you think you are? Are you judging me? You see, nobody has a problem with judgments that are compliments.
Right.
They only have a problem with judgments that they don't like. As Augustine said, people, he said, we love the truth when it enlightens us. We hate the truth when it convicts us.
Mm.
People don't have a problem with judgments they like. They have a problem with judgments that convict them. That's the problem. Everybody's making judgments. The only question is, are your judgments true?
Yeah. And I said, oh, so great. So now I understand. So in other words, when I saw slavery, a slave trade, mm-hmm. I shouldn't judge.
That'd right.
be wrong. And if I see my next-door neighbor taking the 2-year-old and smashing them, mm-hmm. and the kid's bleeding, and I shouldn't judge, of mm-hmm. course. And mm-hmm. human trafficking, I mean, who are we to
right.
judge?
Yeah, yeah.
So what it comes down to is my judgment is the only acceptable
now,
judgment.
Yeah, now, in defense of the new atheists, they don't really buy into that, thankfully. Mm-hmm. They don't buy into the idea you ought not make judgments. In fact, some of them, even like Sam Harris, tries to say, there are moral absolutes. He tries to ground them in something other than God. I cover that in the morality chapter of the book. He fails, but at least I'll give him credit. He thinks certain things are really right and certain things are really wrong.
Got it. So this whole book breaks down with an acronym, CRIMES, standing for causality, reason, information, and intentionality, morality, evil, science. The book, Stealing from God, the author, Dr. Frank Turek, his website, crossexamined.org. All right, phone lines are getting jammed. We will go straight to your phone calls when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, friends, if you followed the national controversy over the major cover story article in Newsweek called The Bible So Misrepresented, It's a Sin, you'll know that I wrote about it. We talked about it on the radio. Many other evangelical Christian leaders addressed it. Biblical scholars addressed it. Well, Newsweek has graciously published a lengthy response. My response is even longer than the initial article. They have posted this on their website, my response to the article, really seeking to set the record straight about scriptures, about what we believe and why. Help get this out to the widest possible readership. Would you do that? And you'll also be informed as you go. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article. Share it first because it'll take you a while to read it. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, email it to friends. Help spread the word. We really want this to go viral. And then the author of the piece that I so strongly differed with, we've had some great conversation off the air. He's going to be joining me on the air, God willing, next Wednesday. And we're going to talk at length about these very issues. 866-34-TRUTH, my guest in studio, Dr. Frank Turek, dear friend and colleague. His new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Ready to take some calls, Frank?
Absolutely. But, Mike, I want to say that your listeners really ought to read that piece you did about Newsweek. It's important.
All right.
It is.
Read it.
Yep.
There you go. Let's start in Herndon, Virginia. Lee, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and thank you, Doctor, for presenting your book and your argument today on the radio. I'm a Christian, even though I consider myself a dysfunctional Christian.
Hey, we're all dysfunctional.
I wanted to make an observation quickly. You know, having a couple of degrees and being on major college campuses myself, I think that one of the things that a lot of Christians are afraid of is sending their kids to mainstream colleges. And I think that the specter of atheism is a little overblown. Generally on college campuses, most of the kids tend to be some sort of Christian, even if it's nominal. And that occurs, you know, they come in that way and generally leave that way. Now, you do have certain segments, certain departments, maybe philosophy and the scientific departments that have more atheists and more agnostics. But I think this idea that atheism has run amok on college campuses is overblown. I think you do have schools where you have more of that, but it's not as if the kids, you know, there's this idea out there that kids are being brainwashed, and I think that's generally not true. I just want parents to understand that it's a little overblown there.
Why don't you address that, Frank? And then also, first tell our listeners what gives you the right to address it. How many campuses have you been on? Well, how often do you address these things?
Oh, I'm on. I probably do 20 different campus events a year, and been doing it since 2007, 2008. So I've been on several campuses, and I will say that obviously it's not everywhere that the intellectual problems surface with kids. But I will say this, Lee, that 3 out of every 4 young people who leave the home walk away from the church once they leave the home. Now, intellect isn't the only reason. There are a number of other factors that go into their decision to walk away from the church. Many of them are volitional rather than intellectual. In other words, they just don't want to live by Christian morality anymore. And that's why I urge people to ask this question to those that say they're no longer Christians, or people who say they never were Christian. The question is this: if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? Now, Lee, I've asked that on college campuses to atheists several times, and in many cases, they'll yell back at me, no, no. What do you mean, no? You claim to be a beacon of reason. Yet I ask you, if something were true, would you believe it? And you say no. How's that reasonable? It's not. The problem isn't intellectual for many people. It's moral. They don't want it to be true. The elephant in the room is morality and accountability. But that being said, however, bringing evidence to the college classroom is something that is so infrequently done that when we go on a college campus and we can put two declarative sentences together, they go, wow, I never thought there was this much evidence for Christianity. So let me agree with you in one part to say it might not be everywhere, but it certainly is prevalent. It's certainly something that every parent ought to be aware of. And they ought to at least ground their child in the truth before they send them off into a battle zone.
And you know what's also interesting? I spoke with the head of a major university that basically just does upper-level graduate work on scientific goals. That's their whole institute, mm-hmm. what they do. And he was telling me, he's a confirmed atheist, and he was saying well over 90% of the scholars they're training and working with, and the biologists, and especially in biology, they're atheists.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then you go to a religion department, you're overwhelmed with it. Or at the very least, if it's not atheism, it's a mocking of our faith. We are the small-minded, yeah. narrow-minded, closed-minded religious fundamentalists who just think that the Bible came down out of a cloud mm-hmm. one day. And so there is a mockery of our position and a disdain for the morality of our position, all of which makes these students feel, wow, I'm believing all this error,
right.
And now I've been enlightened. So that's that kind of overwhelming feeling you get hit
with. Well, Mike, in 2007, there were people that did a survey to try and figure out if there was anti-Semitism on campus. Among professors, they found virtually no anti-Semitism. You know what they found? Anti-evangelicalism. 53% of college professors view evangelical students unfavorably. College professors are five times more likely to be atheists than the general public. Now, I'm not saying there aren't good college professors out there. There are. What I'm saying is statistically, they are decidedly anti-Christian. Most of them, as you just mentioned, Mike, are 80-90% of them are politically and theologically liberal.
And it's a mind-boggling thing. It's something I wrestle with, wanting to see real Jesus revolution, knowing how many of the campuses started, knowing the influence of the campus and how much good
they all started by Christians.
Right,
yeah,
in so many ways. One more thing, then I want to go back to the phones. Again, the new book, Stealing from God by Dr. Frank Turek. Get it. I'll tell you in a moment how you can get it together with the CDs of our interviews, which will include the calls as well. But if you look at the commencement speakers at the major universities, I mean, it's kind of the joke
yeah,
that
right.
you have a handful of moral political conservatives.
And they're protested.
Yeah, they're protested. Yeah. And then you've got all these most radical mm-hmm. ideas, and that's acceptable. So somehow there is a larger mindset. And whereas Lee may be right in terms of specifically, you're not going to run into atheism in every class.
Right.
There is a pervasive mindset
yes.
against the fundamentals.
And that's what the surveys show.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not just anecdotal.
All right. Hey, we're going to blanket New England here for a little while. We'll start in Hull, Massachusetts. AJ, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Dr. Turek, thank you. I just wanted to first thank you, Frank, for all your ministry. I love listening to you. And I'm grateful for what I've learned from your ministry, because I recently had over Twitter a conversation with the David Silverman, president of American Atheists, and in the conversation he said all morality is relative, and I said, well, is that statement relative? Then why should I believe it? And then I said, David, I answered you, but proof presupposes God, because when you accuse someone of lying, you're appealing to the truth, and ultimately, because his worldview was exposed, he basically said, all right, this is my last tweet to you, and I'm out. So I kind of feel like it's amazing that when you take atheism to its conclusion, the worldview in and of itself, it crumbles because it's not built on a firm foundation. So, again, I just want to say thank you for all you do.
Thanks, AJ. I had a debate with David Silverman, which you can see on our website, crossexamine.org, and I went through the whole morality, objective morality, subjective morality with him. In fact, it's in the book, Stealing from God, our dialogue there. Yeah, he denied there was any objective morality and said it was okay to eat babies and it was okay to murder 6 million people. It's all just subjective, in other words. And so that's the ludicrous extent to which atheists need to go to affirm their atheism. They have to take what we know to be true and claim it to be false in order to support atheism.
Hey, AJ, are you presently in school?
Well, Actually, no, I'm actually turning 26.
Okay, got it. Got it. Just curious. Hey, thank you for the call, and thank you for engaging in social media. Back to you, Frank.
Let me make one other point. I know it may seem like it's self-defeating to say when somebody says morality is there is no objective morality, and you say, well, is that an objective statement? That's technically not self-defeating to say that there is no objective morality, because it's not a moral claim itself. But as soon as you try and treat them immorally, they're going to claim that it's objectively morally wrong for you to treat them immorally. So it's practically self-defeating. I just want to make that clarification.
Got it. All right. Thank you for the call again. The book, Stealing from God. To get the book together with the CDs of our entire two-hour interview, call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. This is not available online, only by phone today, 1-800-278-9978, $25 postage paid, the book, plus the CDs of today's interview. We'll be right back with your calls. Let's see, Candelaria and Lynn, you two are up next. Stay right there.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. What if your best reasons to doubt prove that God exists? Atheists are stealing from God to make their case, so says apologetics expert Frank Turek in a book that I personally endorsed. Thoroughly enjoyable read, thoroughly informative. Frank, one thing that I really like about your work is that you take complex subjects and you break them down, not just in a reasoned way, but in a clear thinking way. There are some people that are so brilliant, I can't understand a word they say.
Well, you see, I'm just not that brilliant, Mike. That's why I have to understand it myself in my typical New Jersey mind. You know, I was brought up in a simple way, and I try and keep things as simple as possible.
But it's tons. I mean, you've digested the good information and put it out for us. And plus, I like the Jersey straightforwardness.
Forget about it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Candelaria in Providence, Rhode Island. Hey, Candelaria, are you listening on WARV right now, 1590 AM?
Yes, my station.
All right, wonderful. Yes, we've only been on a couple of weeks. WARV and WBCI in Portland, Maine, 105.9 FM also. So welcome to the Line of Fire. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I've been dealing with two teenagers, and they have made this comment. There are so many religions. How do you know your is the right one? And the other question is, what God has done for me? If you can help me out.
Yes, sir. Or yes, ma'am. The first question was, how do you know your religion is true? Well, first of all, I don't necessarily consider Christianity a religion, but I understand the question. I think you evaluated based on truth. And in chapter 7 of the book, Stealing from God, we lay out four basic questions that you need to answer to show that Christianity is true. Does truth exist? Does God exist? Are miracles possible? Is the New Testament true? And I think when you look at those four questions, you can show beyond a reasonable doubt that Christianity is indeed true. The second question, I don't know if I heard it. Can you state it again?
What has your God done for me?
What has
they
God...
They used to go to church. One is senior, the other one is freshman in college.
Got
it. They say we've been going to church and nothing happened.
Mike, you handle that one.
Yeah, all right. Sure thing. What I would ask them is, have they completely thrown themselves in with God? It's not that God is just our celestial bellboy, you know, we just push a button and he's there at our beck and call and we never have a problem. But if you really give your life over to God, he will change you. He will come into your life. And normally people will follow at a certain distance and then say, well, where is God? It's almost like having a relationship with someone. You're not going to marry someone that follows at that distance. Someone has to completely throw themselves in. And if they will take the plunge, you're not going to get wet until you get in the water. If they will take the plunge and unconditionally say, all right, God, if you're really there, I want to know you and I'm going to give you my entire life, they will not be disappointed. He will become their father. He will grant them forgiveness of sins, and they will see a change in their lives. but they can't just experiment from a distance. The other question that you could ask is, okay, what does God owe them? In other words, why must he do something to satisfy them? If he really is God, we just have to serve him. But I tell them, dive in the water, you'll get wet. Hey, listen, I want to do this as a new listener on our new station. Stay right there. We're going to get your name and address, and I'm going to send you a free copy of Stealing from God, and then give it to your boys and see if they read it. If they do read it, get back to us and let us know what happens. So stay right there. We'll get your address, and we'll send you a free copy of the book. Frank, have you seen people, skeptics, atheists, kids with questions, hear your lecture, read your material, and it's turned them back to God?
Oh, yeah. We get those emails all the time. I think, and you experience this, I know, too, Mike, that you get three responses from people. Some will mock and say, forget that. Others will say, that's interesting, I'll hear more. And some will say, I believe. That's what Paul had on Mars Hill. Those are the three responses you get. Some people say, no way. Some people go, I need to hear more. Some people say, oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, of course. It doesn't happen all the time. But a lot of times you're just planting seeds, as you know.
Yeah.
And it may take years to sprout.
You know, when I did the debate with Professor Bart Ehrman at Ohio State University, a Christian couple came up to me, an older couple, maybe my age or older, and they said, if only you had been here to do this debate when our daughter was here, because she couldn't get answers.
Yep.
And it's not to say they're not godly people and thinking people on the campus. Obviously, she just wasn't exposed to it. But sometimes just to hear someone who can think, who's reasonable, who's educated, who believes what I believe, when I'm some kid or some person getting bombarded, just to know, like, I'm not a philosopher, but William Lane Craig is, and he's got me covered there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a scientist, but John Lennox is.
Yeah,
I'm a Jewish apologist. I got folks covered. Just to know that we're out there. So that's got to mean something to the Christian kids that are believers and they're getting bombarded. It's got to inject them with confidence.
Well, that's why I want them to get our app. We have an app on our website, crossexamine.org. They don't have to have all the answers memorized. We have a quick answer section on the app that will help them deal with these objections. All of our podcasts are on there. And, of course, we're on Facebook. Dr. Frank Turek is the address at Facebook. Cross-Examined is also one of the Facebook pages. So there are places on social media they can get answers. They can have them at their fingertips, Dr. Brown.
All right. So if you go to the website Cross-Examined, that's with a D at the end, crossexamined.org. Download the app. This is for Android, Apple.
Everything.
All platforms.
Yeah. It's almost 50,000 people have downloaded it.
All right, cool.
So
I'm one of them.
Right? All right, good.
So you download the app, and then you look for a subject, okay?
Yeah.
And look, everyone's into social media.
Sure.
So someone gives you an objection, say, hey, let me check my app.
Right.
That's
right,
fair.
Right,
that's cool.
Yeah.
And you go there, and you'll give the concise answers, and then even links to podcasts where you discuss it. Listen, this is using social media for the purposes of God. And the first reason that I wrote my five-volume series on answering Jewish objections to Jesus was not Jewish outreach. That was the second reason. The first was to strengthen Jewish believers. Because I know what I went through getting bombarded by brilliant rabbis that knew Hebrew inside out and tore up my arguments and challenged me in a very gracious, loving way. And I had to wrestle these things through and do the work.
That needs to be in an app soon. I hope that's coming.
Yeah.
Some of those need to be in an app.
We've got a lot of web stuff happening,
right,
but the app, we will. It's on the list.
All right, good.
So the fact is, though, I've run into many Jewish believers, not those who came to faith through the books, just heard from another guy the other day that this greatly helped him come to faith, but many who say, I am still in the faith because of those books. So, friends, Stealing from God is not just for those who are struggling with questions. It's for those who could use an injection of strength and faith. You don't have to be afraid of any argument, moral argument, scientific argument, from a young person, from an educated professor. You don't have to be afraid of any argument. In this book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case, by Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K, will equip you and strengthen you. You can get it by calling 1-800-278-9978. This is only available with a special package by phone. Otherwise, get it at your local bookstore or online. Stealing from God, the book with the CDs of today's two-hour interview. We've got one more hour to go. Just $25 postage paid. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. And I think this will be meaningful to you. The foreword to the book was written by Ravi Zacharias. Enough said.
Oh, what does he know?
Yeah, what does he know? My bottom line today You do not have to fear a single question, objection raised by an atheist, an intellectual. God's word, God's truth stands firm and will continue to stand. My guest, Dr. Frank Turek, says the only way that the atheists can make their arguments is by stealing from God.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is a joy to be with you today on The Line of Fire. This is one of these easy days for me because I have a special guest in studio with me, Dr. Frank Book. Dr. Frank Book.
Frank Book. That's right.
Frank Book, who's written the Turek. Dr. Frank Turek. I was too easy a day for me. Dr. Frank Turek, his new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. He's the co-author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. His website, cross-examined, with a D, cross-examined.org. Tons of great information. Listen, I can answer atheists to an extent, and certain answers I'm ready for. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a philosopher. Frank has really, really been on the front lines on college campuses now, his eighth year of doing this, spoken to thousands and thousands of young people with all their objections, and he's put together a wonderfully helpful book forward by Ravi Zacharias, Stealing from God. Frank, for our new listeners joining us this hour, explain the premise of the book.
The premise of the book is that when atheists make arguments against God, they're stealing from God in order to do so. Like, for example, atheists try and say that reason is on their side, that they're the reasonable ones. But reason wouldn't exist if atheism was true, because if atheism's true, we're just molecules in motion. There is no such thing as reasoning. We're not reasoning, we're just reacting, because every thought we have is the result of a previous natural cause in our brains over which we have no control. And there are no immaterial laws of logic out there that are grounded in an immaterial being, because atheists say everything's material. So if this is so, and I think it quite obviously is, that there are these immaterial laws of logic, then every time an atheist tries to make an argument against God, they're assuming he exists in order to do so.
Right. So C.S. Lewis had said that if we say that God's not just, that we're basically taking the sense of justice he put in us and his puny creations, I'm paraphrasing, as his little creations, we're throwing that back on him. So that's what your whole book does, point by point by
point. Right. Yeah, in fact, in the evil section, we quote Lewis, who said, as an atheist, my argument against God was that the universe seems so cruel and unjust, but how had I got this idea of just and unjust? He said, a man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I calling this universe with unjust if I had no standard of justice? See, justice itself only exists in an immaterial being who can bring about justice, and that's what we mean by God. If there is no God, then every atheist argument that deals with morality or evil falls flat, because they have to assume God exists in order to say something is unjust or unjust or something is evil.
And the idea of justice is contrary to the idea of survival of the fittest, no?
Yes, of course, because to his credit, both Richard Dawkins, to their credit, both Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris are anti-Darwinian when it comes to morality. They say, well, we ought not behave the way nature behaves. Well, I agree with them, but what do you mean ought not? Where does that come from? Because Dawkins himself says there is no good or evil, there is no justice or injustice. We just, quote, dance to the music of our DNA, unquote. Mm-hmm. Well, if we're just dancing to the music of our DNA, then there is no real oughts. There's just is. There's just how we behave. We're no different than a lion killing a zebra. There is no morality if atheism's true. So when atheists object to Darwinian morality, they're smuggling God in order to object to it.
And friends, what Frank's new book, Stealing from God, will do for you is this. When the atheist sees suffering in this world, there are many caring atheists and some have become atheists because of suffering. When they see suffering in this world and they say, it's not fair in the court, it's just not fair. What Frank does in Stealing from God is articulates why that is a proof of the existence of God. And when the atheist says it's not fair, if there was a God, this wouldn't be happening. He's just confessed There must be a God. If you have a question, if you're an atheist, if you're wondering, if you've got kids with questions, the phone lines are now open, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today, Dr. Frank Turek, his new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case, available in your local bookstores or online. We have a special package we have put together online, by phone only. We'll tell you about it in a little while, the book and the two CDs of today's interview. So if you're interested in that, stay tuned. We'll tell you how to get it. And if you have a question for Frank, something you've struggled with, sometimes I find questions from little kids to be the hardest questions about God and his goodness. If you're wondering yourself, if you're critical of our beliefs and you're listening and you're shaking your head as Frank is talking, well, give him a call. He's not put off by serious questions. He's not put off by questions that are even impolite, as long as it's a genuine question that you want to ask. 866-34-TRUTH. Frank, Christians and atheists often disagree over politics and human rights, but you say that atheists unwittingly steal from God in order to argue for their political rights. So it's abortion, same-sex marriage, government health care, whatever. So explain that. Unpack that for me.
Yeah, well, there are no rights unless God exists. Everything's just a matter of opinion. It's just your opinion against, say, Hitler's opinion, if there is no God, right? If there's no authority beyond humanity, everything's just a matter of opinion. So when atheists are in the public square trying to say, we have a right to abortion, we have a right to same-sex marriage, we have a right to government health care, whatever it is, they are stealing rights from God in order to make their case. In fact, Bill Maher, who you might know, I've been on his show several times years ago, Politically Incorrect. Bill Maher was complaining.
Is it Real Time?
Well, it's Real Time now. Yeah, it's on HBO. But I was on one of his.
He's
Politically Incorrect.
Influential.
Yeah, actually, I give credit to Maher, because he comes out hard against Islam,
yes,
when most liberals won't. I mean, yeah, he's telling the truth about that. In fact, I was on a program with him where we both agreed on Islam, believe it or not.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I've played clips from him on the air on that.
Yeah, yeah. In any event, I was on and we were talking about abortion at one point. And of course, I'm pro-life and he's pro-abortion. And he admitted that a woman has a moral right to abortion. Complain that God killed everybody in the Noah, that God is a tyrant, and how could God do this? So my question for Bill Maher was this: why is it that when God plays God in the Bible and kills people, he's immoral, but when Bill Maher plays God and kills people in the womb, that's his moral right?
What do you think Bill Maher would say?
I don't know what he'd say, but the point is he would probably say, well, actually what he said during the radio or the TV program was, well, it's just a bunch of goo in the womb. I said, Bill, factually, scientifically, you're wrong. It's not a bunch of goo. It's a 100% genetic human being from the moment of conception. So for you to say you have a right to kill that being, but God doesn't have a right to kill people, is completely ridiculous. Obviously, God can kill people anytime he wants. He's God. He can resurrect them in the next life. In fact, people don't really die. They just change locations.
Yeah. And the other thing is, God doesn't murder.
Of course he can't. He's
right.
The giver of life.
Right.
He can take life
and
resurrect
only,
it.
And yeah, he only takes life rightly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So even with one of the most difficult subjects in the Bible, which is the extermination of the Canaanites.
I deal with that in the book. Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll give a hint of it, and then folks can read the book to get more. But admittedly difficult subject
to
deal with. We see Islamic terror, and how can that be? Well, aren't you saying Joshua did the same thing? A simple point is that when God promised the land to Abram in Genesis 15, he basically tells him, we got to wait about 400 years until the evil is enough. In other words, when they get to a certain point, then we can justly give you the land. Nancy and I, my wife and I, were talking, and she said, what if the Canaanites had gotten to the point that they were like the Islamic terrorists, like Islamic State? Who would argue with exterminating?
So, well, they were to that point because they were literally burning their children in the molten hot arms of the idol Molech. They were doing that. You know, on every college campus I go to, Mike, I always hear atheists saying, well, if there is a good God, why doesn't he stop all the evil in the world? And then you go to the Old Testament and you see God stepping in to stop the evil, and the atheists are complaining about it.
Right.
You know?
So again, when God kills, he is not indiscriminate, like, here's a godly person who loves us. Like, I think I'll just fry them today because I got nothing else to do to be excited. So Frank, in Stealing from God, for our new listeners, you break down the book in this great acronym, CRIME. So it's easy for people to remember, easy to think through. You know, some of the Psalms, like Psalm 119, are broken down with each verse begins with the first letter of the alphabet for eight verses, then the second letter. And that was done to help people memorize. So these are really good memory tools, especially when your average American doesn't use their brain that much. Very helpful. Break down CRIMES for us.
Yes, CRIMES is an acronym or an acrostic we use to point out that these are aspects of reality that atheists say point to atheism in many cases, when in fact none of these things would exist unless God existed. And the C stands for causality, the R stands for reason, the I stands for information and intentionality, the M stands for morality, E for evil, and S for science. Those are all things that atheists say support their position, when in fact none of them would exist unless God existed. And in fact, the CRIMES, each one of those letters represents a different chapter in the book. And it was providential that the order worked out, too, that we go from causality to reason, information to morality, evil, and then science. That's the order of the book.
All right. If I said, okay, you've got this acronym. Mm-hmm. I see the front of the book you've signed to me with some great scripture references as well. I see it's printed. The page orders go. It goes from page one to page 260-something. I see it's clearly laid out. It makes sense. If I just said the book just happened, would that be a fraction of saying the universe just happened or a human being just happened?
Well, in fact, in that book is information. And in that book, I don't know how many words are in that book or how many letters, but it's far less than 3.5 billion letters, right? Well, there's 3.5 billion letters worth of DNA in every one of your 40 trillion cells, in your body, my body, and everyone listening right now, Mike. Now, to say that that resulted by natural forces is like saying that the Library of Congress resulted from an explosion in a printing shop. You know, I don't have enough faith to believe that. So on the information chapter, that's the I in CRIMES, we point out that this isn't a God of the gaps argument, that we just haven't figured out a natural cause for information. This is positive information for an intelligent being. When you see, even if you just saw in a sign that welcome to Charlotte, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina, you wouldn't say that the wind, the rain, and erosion made those letters welcome to Charlotte in that
order. And happened to hit the right
side. Yeah. I mean, you'd go, no, that's the product of intelligence. And it's interesting to me that atheists will write book after book filled with information saying that information does not require an intelligent being. Now, after reading some of their books, you might want to agree with them, but you get the idea.
All right. So I've talked to young people and older people and surveyed them and asked how many of them lost faith, at least for a season, sometimes students in our ministry school, in either high school or college because of evolution. Mm-hmm. And I've been shocked to see how many hands go up. Now, the reason I'm shocked is because when I was in high school, just as we started getting into serious science, I started getting high. I didn't pay much attention. Then we went on strike in our school, and we had this special program where we had no formal classes for 60, 70 of these radicals. My only formal class for 2 years was band and orchestra. Everything else was take if you want, don't take. So I had almost no formal education. I was just in the Word day and night because I got saved right then. In the Word, sharing the gospel. Okay, so then go from there to college, and in college I took all other courses. So I was never confronted with the objections of science. I've had to learn stuff subsequently to begin to understand the issues better. But why then is evolution so formidable? Why does it seem to put things together in such a way where suddenly people think, it's all wrong. It's all false. There is no God.
Well, first of all, we deal with that in Chapter 3 to a great extent. But let me just give you the short answer. Let's suppose that macroevolution, the goo to you via the zoo, the molecules to man version that Richard Dawkins believes.
So not micro,
true.
Not just
changes
within a species.
Yeah, no, we all believe in micro. We all believe in micro.
Okay.
But let's just say macro is true. Does that mean that God does not exist? What can macroevolution explain? All it can explain is the arrival of new life forms. It can't explain the origin of the universe, the fine-tuning of the universe, the objective moral laws, the natural forces themselves. It can't explain where the first life came from or the first genetic code. It can't explain consciousness, morality, all these things. So even if macroevolution were 100% true, it wouldn't necessarily mean that Christianity was false. And my point is, even if macroevolution is true, the laws that allow it to continue must be guided by an external intellect. That's what Thomas Aquinas talked about when he talked about final causality. Aristotle did as well. There's a mind behind the natural forces. Why are they so precise? Why are they so orderly? Why do they do the same thing over and over again? Because there's an external intellect. There's a goal-directedness to nature, regardless of whether or not evolution's true.
So even just to get where we are, there are atheists who say there must be a multiverse, there must be many, many universes, because it's impossible if the universe is 14 million years old, billion years old, to get everything right. Yeah. It would take a lot more than that, so there must be.
You know, atheists are always saying we ought not believe anything we can't see, hear, touch, taste, or smell. Well, now we're supposed to believe in a multiverse that we can't see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. What is going on here?
Right.
They're just making stuff up, Mike.
So it's anything but acknowledging God, because, even if we have to create more universes.
Yes, because the elephant in the room is morality and accountability, Mike. That's the elephant in the room.
The book, Stealing from God, the author Frank Turek, his website, cross-examined with a D, crossexamined.org. If you'd like to get the book, together with the CDs of today's interview, and help support our ministry, $25, postage paid, but by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, have you read my full-length response to the article published at Christmas time by Newsweek? Their article, The Bible So Misunderstood It's a Sin. Newsweek has allowed me to write a full-length response. Fully as long as the initial article, if not longer. It's on their website. You can read it by going to my website, askdrbrown.org. When you go there, just click on latest article. Share it with your friends. The more people this can reach, the better. It is so important to get this information out to the widest possible audience, and you'll be informed. Read the article. It'll answer a lot of your questions about the Bible. My guest, Frank Turek, his new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Dr. John Lennox, professor of mathematics at Oxford University, one of the most learned men I've ever met. He said, this book provides powerful and clear answers to questions of enduring importance for every thinking person. Frank, before we get back to your book, let's talk about something that has recently been announced at Duke University. We've got a lot of listeners in that part of North Carolina right now. Mm-hmm. So fill them in.
Well, yeah, they're every Friday going to allow Muslims to go up, I guess, in the chapel and announce the Muslim call to prayer. And this is a Methodist university, by the way. Duke was founded by the Methodists. This is a John Wesley University. And my point on the whole nonsense is this. The only worldview that would allow multiculturalism is the Judeo-Christian worldview. The Muslims won't allow it. If they ever take over, Christians aren't going to be able to do this.
We're going to ring the church bells.
Yeah. The Hindus aren't going to allow it. They have a caste system there. They're not going to protect human rights. Atheists don't traditionally. Why? Because whoever's in power gets to make the rules. The only worldview that's going to protect the ability of everyone to worship freely is the Judeo-Christian worldview. So for Duke, which is supposed to be a Christian university, to basically advocate Islam from their chapel seems to me to be ridiculous.
Yeah, the issue is, for those who've never heard the prayer call, it is loud.
Yes.
For example, you live in Israel, there are certain cities where you'll hear it
right.
Five times a day, the call to prayer. You'll be talking to someone and suddenly you hear this blaring sound. Mm-hmm. To them, it's beautiful sound, and they're chanting words from the Quran and things like that. But there is something about it that is it makes an imposition. It is making a declaration, and is certainly something that is getting your attention. It's one thing to love every Muslim and to treat them fairly. It's another to say you're free to take over our society or our campus.
If Andrea Pacelli were doing the Muslim call to prayer, maybe it would sound good. But I've been in many places where the guy can't carry a tune. It sounds shrill to me. But of course, as you point out, the content behind it is an imposition. See, Islam means submission.
Yeah.
That's what it means, as you know. And so you'll only live in peace once you submit to Islam.
Right. So the question would be, if you go to Al-Azhar University in Egypt, which is 100,000 students, mm-hmm. or Tehran University, or go to Holy City of Qoms in Iran, you go to one of these different places and say, hey, you know, we've got a bunch of Christians on the campus. Oh, yeah, great. We're fellowshipping and sharing the gospel. We're evangelizing among the Muslims. Okay, that's not going to happen. But listen, we want to announce our prayer time because we are, you know, we want to ring the bells on uh-huh. Sunday and gather. It's not going to happen. No. And look, if you had Muslims want to pray and you have a multi-faith chapel, and they want to reserve it at certain times.
Fine.
Well, it's a multi-faith chapel.
Yeah.
If religious Jews wanted to gather and do what they do, fine. But you are not making a public announcement over the entire campus. And I believe if they're going to do it, that Christians should ask for equal time.
Oh, well, I actually think if you give to Duke University or you send your child there, let me ask you a question. Do you love God more than you love your basketball tickets? I hope so. Because if you're given to that university when they're doing that, I think that's unconscionable. I wouldn't give them a dime for them to support Islam from the chapel.
Yeah, and to say that Islam by its nature must be loudly proclaimed, mm-hmm. otherwise we can't practice our faith. Yeah. Look, if everybody else, you're a religious Jew, on Friday you know exactly when Sabbath is. You've got your calendar. You know the exact times. You know the times when you pray. If you're ever on a plane like an El Al flight going to Israel, you'll see certain times all these religious Jews, they gather, they go in the back. How did they know? There was no prayer call. So how do believers know when to pray or when to go? How do you know what time to go to work?
Look, there's a difference between permitting something and promoting something.
Yep.
This is promoting it. And a Christian university will permit Islam like Duke does, but to promote it, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, so Christians should say, okay, listen, if you're going to do that for Islam, I know it's their tradition, okay, but it's important to us that the gospel goes forward. So we want a certain time every day or a certain time once a week, we get to sing out, chant John 3:16, uh-huh. and say, Jesus is Lord. How about that? Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord. Uh-huh. Jesus is Lord. And then say, hey, could you translate into English what you're proclaiming there? You know, during that prayer call.
It would be interesting if the folks in Duke would allow the Muslims to get up there and read from the aspects of the Quran that talk about subjugating women or subjugating homosexuals. I wonder if they'd allow them to do that. It'd be interesting.
Can we do a Quranic reading?
Can
we do that as well? All right, Frank, we got a couple minutes before the next break, mm-hmm. but you say the war is not between Christianity and science, mm-hmm. but between atheism and science. We've touched on that, but that's a strong statement.
Yeah, well, that's from the book Stealing from God, and there's a chapter in there on science, and I point out that the issue here is a lot of people think, well, Christianity's at war with science. No, atheism is at war with science. Why? Because if atheism is true, we can't do science. Why not? Because there are no laws of logic. Everything's material. We can't even do science if we can't think. If we're just molecules in motion, we're not reasoning, we're just reacting. The philosophical immaterial principles that can only be supported by theism don't exist in an atheistic world. See, theism makes science possible. Atheism makes science impossible.
But why has the church always suppressed all scientific thought?
Well, they haven't. That's the myth. And that's what we point out in the book, that they haven't. In fact, all the early scientists, the founders of modern science, were all Christians. You say, well, that's prior to Darwin. Yeah, but the reason they started science is because they knew, as one scientist put it, that we are thinking God's thoughts after him by observing how the world works. And as I mentioned earlier, observing how the world works does not disprove there's a creator or a sustainer. The quote you read earlier in the previous hour was, to say that science can disprove the existence of God is like saying a mechanic can disprove the existence of Henry Ford, right? A mechanic, no matter how much he knows about how the engine works, will never disprove the need for a creator of the engine. The same thing is true with science. No matter how much science advances to know how the world works, it'll never disprove the existence of a creator or a sustainer of the world. And by the way, science doesn't say anything. Scientists do.
Yeah.
All science needs to be interpreted, and that's what scientists do.
I remember seeing Richard Dawkins debating John Lennox, and Dawkins said something like the theory of vicarious atonement is unscientific. It's like, what's it got to do with science?
Yeah, right.
What does it got to do with science?
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Flew made statements like that. You know, science cannot tell you what is beautiful or what love is.
That's right.
And yet these scientists go this far. The book, Stealing from God, Dr. Frank Turek, his website, Cross-Examined, with a D at the end. Oh, you know, I'm going to read the text of the Muslim prayer call when we come back.
No.
In English. In English.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
What an enjoyable day I've had sitting here with my friend, Dr. Frank Turek. His new book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. You know, I do a ton of reading on ebook and e-form, digital, on my computer with Logos software and other things. But it's really cool not just to hold the book, but the God, the O in God.
Yeah,
is,
the folks at Tyndale and NavPress did a great job on the cover. So
yeah,
you just need to get the cover. It doesn't come through on Kindle.
Yeah. Got to get that. Yeah, nice. It's really special. Mm-hmm. According to criminology professor Dr. Mike Adams, this book is an effective tool for reaching committed atheists because it demands that the atheists abide by the same standards they impose on others. Touché for doing that. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be going to the phones shortly with questions for Dr. Frank Turek. But Frank, there's a section in your book called Sleeping with Your Girlfriend. All right. What's that about?
A friend of mine, a mutual friend of ours, by the way, he's a pastor here in Charlotte, was giving a talk, a sermon on the new atheists and why they were wrong. And some guy came up to him after and said, you know, I used to be a Christian. I'm an agnostic now. And I don't think what you're doing is right. And my friend said, well, why not? And he said, well, Jesus said to love, and what you're doing is not loving. And my friend said, wait a minute. Jesus didn't say just love. Love without truth is a borderless mess, I should say, borderless mess. And you have to give both. In order to love somebody, you got to tell them the truth, especially a truth that has eternal consequences. So this kid fired one objection after another at my friend David. And my friend David realized he wasn't even really listening to the answers that David was giving. So he finally stopped and he said, you know why I think you're doing this? Because you're sleeping with your girlfriend, aren't you? And the kid just stopped. He blushed and realized he had been caught. The reason he was an agnostic now was because he didn't like the moral restraints he thought that Christianity put on him. And many atheists admit this. In fact, Christopher Hitchens, I debated him a couple of times. You can see the debates for free on our website, crossexamined.org. You could tell he was just angry with God, and which is why I summed up his book at the end of both of our debates this way. I said, you can sum up Christopher Hitchens' book in one sentence. Here it is. There is no God, and I hate him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, he just didn't want him to exist because he called God a cosmic North Korean dictator peering in on our sex lives. And my point is, Mike, is that this doesn't prove or disprove atheism, but it does show that the motivation behind some atheists is much more volitional or moral than it is intellectual. They don't want it to be true because they don't want there to be a God, because God interferes with what they want to do. And that's why I always ask them, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And many times they say no.
Yeah, I remember sharing the gospel with an archaeology teacher in college, and she said, the professor said, I'm not willing to give up the throne of my heart yet.
Ooh, yeah, there
you go. So I thought, at least you understand.
That's right.
There's a throne.
That's right.
And there's someone ruling it.
She's a lot closer than people who have obscured that.
Yeah, and we often see that there's an emotional base for atheism.
Yes.
Some type of disappointment, abandonment by a father.
Big time.
Yeah, and it's not to say that consciously this person today is not an intellectual atheist, but it's to say that something else started the journey towards atheism.
That's right, and they've suppressed it, as Paul says in Romans 1. They've suppressed the truth, and God has given them up to go their own way. In fact, Paul Vitz, as you know, at New York University, from which you've graduated, did that famous study called The Faith of the Fatherless, where he looked into atheists.
And he's a former atheist himself.
Yeah, famous atheists, and he found out that invariably they had either a bad or no relationship with their father. Look, if you can't, if you don't have a good relationship with your earthly father, it can sometimes be difficult to imagine a heavenly father that cares for you.
Yeah, and that, again, reminds us of the role that parents play.
Which points also out why family so important, which fuels into this whole debate about marriage and all this. It's all interacted here. It's all interrelated, I should
say. And it's covered in the book. And we're about to take a break, but you get into politics and religion and separation of church and state.
Yep.
All in the book. The new book, Stealing from God, the author, Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K, his website, crossexamined with a D.org. We'll be right back. We'll go to the phones.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest in studio, Dr. Frank Turek, his book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case, his website, crossexamined with a D.org. Let's go back to the phones. Matt in Salem, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, I'm a college student, currently chemistry major, and I actually am digging in for a philosophy minor as well.
Where are you studying, Matt?
Say again?
Where are you studying?
UMass Amherst.
Okay, great. Yeah, go ahead, please.
So I've come across a lot. I had to do a lot of reading for philosophy, obviously, and one resounding question has kind of come up in my desire to placate a good reason is kind of falling short a little bit, but I have some reasonings. But the question, does God command us to do actions because they're morally right, or actions morally right because God commands them? Is kind of...
Yeah, excellent question, Matt. That's called the Euthyphro dilemma, which we cover in the morality chapter, Stealing from God, and it's not a dilemma at all. A dilemma is normally A or non-A. This is A or B. Maybe there's a C. Maybe there's a third option here, and there is. God isn't arbitrary. He just doesn't invent right or wrong, nor does God have to look beyond himself for a standard of right and wrong. God's nature is the standard of right and wrong. God is the standard. So the buck has to stop somewhere. It stops at God's nature. So the Euthyphro dilemma is a false dilemma. God is the standard.
Okay. And also, I've come upon, I guess, the something of a recursive argument through the will of God as well. So where do you stand as a good reasoning for, are we puppets, moving through, under God's control completely, or does the free will exist? And I've talked to my friends a great deal about that. And, it's hard to take a stand because once you're right, the theory that once you're through the door, you can look back and see, ordained for eternity. But before you're, through the door, it's more of like,
the world have free will as atheism. Why? Because we're just molecules in motion. So you're not really thinking what you're doing. You're just reacting. So Christians, of course, debate this issue. But I take a firm stance that you do have free will. And Dr. Michael Brown here, who's sitting right across from me, has debated James White on this issue. I'm sure you can see that. But let me just give you a quick analogy here or a quick illustration. God is outside of time. So his choice of us does not affect our free will. Before God created the universe, before he elected to create this universe, he knew how it would turn out. He knew that you would call today freely. Just because he knew you would call today doesn't mean he's causing you to call today. You're still freely choosing to call. The same thing is true when you choose to accept Christ or reject Christ. You freely choose to accept or reject him, even though God ultimately knew what your choice would be.
Yeah, and with that, Nat, God intervenes in history. God does certain things because he has a plan. But if he has a plan, let's just say his plan is the crucifixion of Jesus. That doesn't mean he takes a kind-hearted, God-fearing person and turns them into a murderer who wants to crucify Jesus. He will find those who have a murderous heart, those who are duplicitous, and put them in certain situations where they do what they desire to do. And in Isaiah 57:15, it speaks of God. It says, Shochein Ad, which in Hebrew means he inhabits eternity. So as Dr. Turek said, he exists outside of time. And I would liken it to this to help someone think it through. Let's say there's a big sports event, a major game that you want to catch, but you've got to be working while it's on. So you make sure you don't find out what the results are, and you've got it all set up on DVR. at home. So you get home and you watch it. All right. It's already happened. And you're watching it, but you, and it's fixed. It can't be changed, but it's fixed based on what the people actually did in the game. You're just watching it later. So God existing in eternity transcends time. You have other philosophers like Dr. William Lane Craig who argue for what's called Molinism or middle knowledge, and they come at it from that philosophical angle. But to me, if we simply approach it like that, of course there's free will. And then you can also say that the Bible, if someone says, well, the Bible talks about predestination, yeah, it mentions that. In other words, God has a purpose, and he's going to take us from point A to Z if we give our lives to him. At the same time, throughout the Bible, it says choose, 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 and God is pleased when we make good choices and grieved when we make bad choices. So if we're going to use the Bible as any evidence, then we have to take its whole testimony.
By the way, Matt, I'm going to be up at University of Massachusetts at Lowell. I don't know how close that is to Amherst, but I'll be up there at the end of March, and then I'll be up at another college in Massachusetts the end of April. So if you go to the website, crossexamine.org, and click on schedule, or get our new app there, it has the calendar on it. I'd love to meet you when I come up there.
All right. Thank you, sir, for the call.
Are you doing a talk?
Yeah, I'll be doing I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Yes. Yeah. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist on the campus. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And that's a great place if you've got friends that challenge you and are skeptical. Say, well, bring your questions to this
guy.
That's right. Because you always have open mic Q&A.
I always do. Yep.
All right. Thank you, sir, for the call. All right. This is the first time I'm speaking to you, sir, because I'd remember if I had ever spoken to Mountain Man Mo before today. But Mountain Man Mo, Walnut Cove, North Carolina. Welcome to the broadcast.
I think I'm stuck in at least one time, maybe a couple.
Under the same name? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You have called. I stand corrected. Go ahead.
No problem. we're human, so we're going to make mistakes. Well, on this topic on atheism, I wish y'all would hit on the topic of deism, because I myself went from atheism to deism to now full gospel. And
got it. And that's kind of the C.S. Lewis one from atheist and theist. All right. So Frank, we've just got to put you on hold. You can hear us, but your line was making a little noise there. First, explain the difference between atheism, deism, and theism.
Yeah, atheism, there is no God. Deism, there's a God who created the universe and sustains it, but he does not interact with the universe at all through miracles. And then, of course, theism, God does both. God creates and sustains and interacts. And actually, you'd be surprised to find that both Lawrence Krauss, who's a new atheist, who I cover in the book, and Richard Dawkins say a good case can be made for a deistic God. Now, the interesting thing about this is that deism is a lot closer to theism.
So he set it up, and then he just left it.
Yeah, he just set it up. Well, you can't just leave it completely, because obviously the laws of nature have to be sustained.
He doesn't interact in a personal way. He's not involved.
That's right. The reason we know he does interact, obviously, is because, miracles would be one. And the greatest miracle in the Bible is not the resurrection. It's the first verse. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. If that verse is true, every other verse is at least possible. And we have good evidence that the first verse is true, that space, time, and matter came into existence out of nothing. So whatever created it can't be made of space, time, and matter. It must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, moral, personal, and intelligent creator. And secondly, we know that there must be a loving God, which means he would intervene, because we have the moral law written on our hearts. So we get morality from this being. He's not going to leave us alone. He's going to come rescue us. And that ultimately is the whole theme of the entire Bible. The theme of the entire Bible is redemption. Paradise lost in Genesis is paradise regained in Revelation. Everything in between is the story of redemption, where God literally puts human flesh over his deity and comes to earth and lives a perfect life to save the creatures he created from themselves.
Got it. So we have evidence of God's intervention.
Yes.
And then ultimately, the fact is Jesus did come into the world.
Yes, of course.
And it's if you take him out of the picture, and you take the Exodus out of the picture, and you take God's providential keeping of the Jewish people out of the picture, well, then you can make and the trillions of prayers that God has answered of his people out of the picture. But he's intervened so much.
And
that
continues to.
Even in my own life, just walking with God, I would take a tremendous stretch of faith to say everything that's happened these last 43 years just happened
without
God.
Think about this, Mike. Every spiritual experience in the history of the world has to be false for atheism to be true.
Craig Keener has a two-volume study called Miracles.
Yep.
It started as a footnote in his 6,000-page Acts commentary. And Craig was an atheist, came to faith as a teenager. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's two volumes.
I have it. It's amazing.
What Craig basically says is that you have to discount the testimony of roughly 200 million people as a conservative estimate in terms of those who've experienced bona fide miracles today. All right. Frank, the prayer call that's going forth at Duke University, the Islamic prayer call that will go forth on Fridays, that you'll hear the Allahu Akbar, you'll hear the Shahada, this basic confession. But here's what it is in English. So how do you feel that this is going to be sounded from the rooftops at Duke? First, God is great. I bear witness that there is no God except the one God. I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger of God. This people's heads are being chopped off over this.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not saying the people at Duke want to chop your head off.
Right.
And then hurry to the prayer. Hurry to success. God is great. There is no God except the one God. And then prayer is better than sleep. That's for the pre-dawn prayer. So this is a serious proclamation of Islam. And I think we just need to ask the question. I'll probably write about it. Would they allow the proclamation, Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord. There is one God and one Lord. Jesus is Lord.
They used to. They're Methodists at Duke. They're supposed to be.
We come back. We're going to talk about hell, and we're going to talk about a philosopher named Thomas Nagel. We've got one last segment. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I trust me on this, friends. Go to my website as soon as you have the opportunity. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. All right? When you get there, click on latest article. It is my lengthy response to the Newsweek article that many felt was a hit piece on the Bible. Newsweek has posted my in-depth response and their opinion columns. Very gracious of them to do it. The author of the article that I took such exception to, we've had great dialogue off the phone. He's going to be joining me, Kurt Eichenwald, joining me on the air next Wednesday for 2 hours. So we are right in the thick of major news about the scriptures, and this is a really important must-discuss topic. Please read the article and be part of my team. Share it on Facebook, tweet it out, tell your friends about it. My guest, Dr. Frank Turek, his book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case, with wonderful endorsements, a foreword from Ravi Zacharias. Thomas Nagel, a philosopher, atheist, materialist, he wants there to be no God because he doesn't like the idea of a God to whom he is accountable. And yet he says that materialism, atheistic materialism, cannot explain our existence or the universe.
Exactly. He wrote a book called Mind and Cosmos, Why the Neo-Darwinian View of Reality is Almost Certainly False.
And you deal with him in your book.
Yeah, I deal with him in the book because the atheist went after him, even though he's an atheist himself. He's saying, look, materialism can't be true. In order to make an argument for materialism, you're using immaterial realities like the law of logic to do so. In fact, when you think about this, Mike, and this is what I point out in the book as well, the things that make life living, really, are not material at all. Love, relationships, joy, all these things that we have.
And that science doesn't explain or define.
Science just deals with cause and effect inside the world here, inside the natural world. It doesn't deal with you know, you can't do a scientific test to see if you love somebody.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's one of the most important things we do. What is love?
Science defines love. What is love? Science defines beauty.
You know what Christopher Hitchens said in our debate, one of our debates, he was asked, and by the way, all the debates are on our website for free, crossexamined.org. He was asked, what is love? And you know what he said? He said it was a chemical reaction. I said, well, gee, go tell that to your wife. You know, I got the chemical reaction today. Tomorrow I might not have it. Sorry, dear.
Yikes. And add into that that there's an adultery gene, and
yeah,
you got
yeah,
it all worked
right.
out
well,
then.
Hey, I just have the anti-gay gene, too. Don't blame me. Come on, you know. I mean, this is the fault of materialism,
yeah,
is that it can't explain the most important things about reality. And that's why I say when atheists are trying to argue for atheism, they're stealing from God's world in order to do so. By the way, the title of the book is Stealing from God. It has nothing to do with tithing. Okay, it's stealing from God. Why atheists need God to make their case.
All right, and friends, when you go to Dr. Turek's website, download the app. If you have tablets, if you have not bear aspirin, if you have if you use tablets, if you on for your app on your iPhone, Android, any platform, it's a great app. I have it. Some like 50,000 people
cross-examined app.
You use it. The cross-examined app. Just go to the App Store and get it. You'll find it breaks down all the major issues, the questions you get hit with, and then it gives you the answers. You click, and here's the short answer. Here's a link to a podcast that gives you the answer. All right, Frank, let's save the heaviest question of all. We've talked some about the problem of suffering, evil, but ultimately all of that pales in comparison with the issue of hell. So what kind of God is there? Is he capricious? Is he the malicious dictator tyrant that creates people to send them to hell? What kind of God is that?
I had a debate with Eddie Tabash, who's a Beverly Hills attorney at University of Michigan. And during the Q&A, he asked me, he said, Frank, my mother was a survivor of the Holocaust. She had a lot of suffering in her life. She was given the gospel before she died, but she's dead now. Is she in hell right now? I said, wow, Eddie knows how to ask a tough question, especially in front of a secular audience. So I said, Eddie, I don't know where your mother is right now. I don't know if she had a deathbed conversion or not, but if she didn't accept Christ before she died, then God would not force her into heaven against her will. You see, the assumption behind the question is everybody wants to go to heaven. That's not true. Who's in heaven? Jesus is in heaven. People have been running from Jesus their entire lives. God's going to force them into heaven against their will? Why would he do that? This afterlife, there's only one of two possibilities. Either God, they're either going to be with God or without God in the afterlife. Hell is separation from God. And obviously, heaven is to be with God. And God will not force you into his presence against their will. Now, you say, well, how is that loving? Well, I used an analogy or an example with the women at Michigan State or at Michigan, and I'll ask the women listening right now. Ladies, have you ever had a man pursue you whom you did not want to date? Some of you are going, yeah, and he's sitting next to me right now. You know, he won't leave you alone. Well, suppose this guy continues to pursue you and he asks you out. You say, look, I like you, but only as a friend, right? Every man has heard this, right? Well, suppose that doesn't deter him. He continues to ask you to the point where he says, look, I love you so much, I'm going to force you to love me. Can he force you to love him? No, love by definition must be freely given. If he truly loved you, what would he do? He would leave you alone. That's exactly what God does for us. He sends us cards, letters, and flowers. He sends us the Bible. He sends us creation. He sends us conscience. He may send us dreams and visions. He'll send us other missionaries, these kinds of things.
And he sends us Jesus.
Yeah, he sends us Jesus. He'll try and get us our attention. And if we don't want him, he will allow us to go our own way. That's why Paul says in Romans chapter 1 that people suppress the truth and unrighteousness to go their own way, and God gives them up. God can't force us to love him, so he separates himself from us, and that ultimately is what hell is.
And whether there's fire and brimstone, literally, and the all of these things, those are separate questions.
Yes.
The clearest thing is it's being with him or without him.
Yes.
And if there is punishment for if we have done wrong, which we have, is there justice?
Yes.
Will there be justice? So there can also be the aspect of punishment. Jesus took it. We don't have to. But if we refuse that gift, then it's on our shoulders. You know, I've brought this up to others, but heaven is not the place where you drink all you want without getting a hangover or sleep with whoever you want without getting an STD. It's being with God. So if I don't want to be with him for an hour on a Sunday or some day of the week to worship him, why am I going to want to be in his presence forever? And C.S. Lewis basically alludes to that. To take people from darkness into light would be the worst hell of all.
Yeah, and he says, C.S. Lewis always put everything very well. He said, in the end, there are two kinds of people. Those who say to God, thy will be done, and those to whom God says, thy will be done.
Right, and those who say to God in this world, depart from me.
Right.
In the world to come, he will say to them, depart from me. And you say, well, what about someone religious? They've sought God all their lives. I know that God is perfectly just.
Sure.
And I know the day I stand before him, it will all make sense. But we do know, look, I started sharing the gospel, and we're out of time, amazing. But I started sharing the gospel in my early years, 43 years ago. And the first two questions people ask me is, What about someone who never heard, right, and you think there's life on other planets? Listen, if I offered you a free meal, would you say that? All right, friends, the book, Stealing from God, the author, Dr. Frank Turek, it's brand new. I've endorsed it. I told Frank, I reached out to him, we've got to get you on the air to talk about it. You can get the book, plus the two CDs, or the 2 hours of CDs, of our radio interview today. You'll find the book chock full of great quotes, points. It is user-friendly, it is practical, and it's for all ages. A high school student could read it, and an elderly person could read it as long as they're thinking clearly. You'll find the book really engaging. $25 postage paid, 1-800-278-9978. This is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. The book, and when you get the book, the two CDs with it. You can also connect with Frank at crossexamined.org. My bottom line today: if you're looking for evidence, if you're looking for truth, if you're going to be open and reasonable, it will lead you to one place only, and that is to God.